Good morning.
Morning, Sensei.
So I'm going to start this series, or I'm not sure what you call it, but today I'm going to talk about the Maha Prajna Paramita Heart Sutra. That line is where we're going to start. The thing about doing this is Maha itself, I think I've mentioned this before, you could write a book on it if you really went into depth. But again, what I'm trying to do is just give a feeling, the overall feeling of the sutra and what various parts are expressing. So these should be considered appetizers. They're brief, but I'm hoping to catch the essence of each one of these words. And a couple of suggestions about working with the Heart Sutra, and probably anything, is that it might help to sit before you study or spend time with the mantra itself. Because I know a lot of times if I sit and then I go and sit with something or work with something, that it's more alive after sitting than if I just eat breakfast and run down and grab the book and then read it. So sitting before would be one recommendation. Now, the other thing, I mentioned this in the list of definitions, but it's a totally different way, but also effective, is if you treat it as a mantra. And you could take like the first word, maha, and it could just be, the in-breath could be, and then the out-breath is, and you just become one with maha, maha. And that doing that, using this as a mantra, in the end takes us to the same place, because in doing that, you become more and more one with this, with the Heart Sutra. And in a different way, its meaning starts to be expressed. I hope also, I took notes last week that each of you, things that you said in the practice circle, and I hope that what I'm going to do today covers some of that, that it's included in this talk. And then finally, I would say this talk is influenced somewhat by Bernie, who I learned a lot from. And so I want to give credit where credit is due. So as they say, without any further ado, I'm going to begin with maha. And maha means inclusive, where nothing is left out. You know, we have a tendency to hold on one thing and push away another. So these are preferences, right? There are people who agree with us, who we bring into our circle and to our club. And then there are others that we push away. They're not in our club. And so when doing this, of course, we're creating a separation. So we have those inside and those outside. But it's important to remember, though, that what really creates this separation is our mind. The mind creates the distinctions, and the mind makes inside and outside. And along with this mental separation, we experience the physical sensation of being separate, which may be very subtle and not easily noticeable, but it's not just the mind making separation and we're seeing this separation like that. This separation resides totally in us. So now if we look at it a different way, if we empty our mind of preferences, if we empty our mind of these preferences, we realize the oneness of everything. The thoughts and the physical sensations which perpetuates separation are no longer there. So when they're no longer there, it's no longer preference, a good preference or a bad preference. It just is. And then we would say that there is just this one body, which includes everything. Now, the interesting thing is that you don't have to wait 30 years to become enlightened to realize the one body. This happens every day in very subtle ways. This experience of separation and connection. And I had this experience myself. I had a doctor's appointment, and the appointment was for 11 o'clock. Being the good Zen person I am, I got there exactly at 11 o'clock, and the waiting room was unusually full, which resulted in there was not really a 6-foot spacing between people. So I checked in, but there were also chairs out in the hallway, and so I sat outside. And I asked, just to be sure, I asked the receptionist, I told her I'll be outside, please come and get me when you're ready. So I took a seat outside and I was sitting, and I think I had the expectation that I might wait 5 minutes, you know, give it a little leeway. And eventually I looked at my watch and it was a quarter after 11 and there was not a peep. And still most of the people, it's just one doctor in this office. There must have been out of five or six people, three people still ahead of me that hadn't been seen. So I could feel my body. I started to get a little agitated and impatient. And the thought that floated through was, this is really disrespectful. You know, being in my, like my time was not important to them or anybody's time there. So I went up to the poor receptionist. I didn't yell or anything, but I said, listen, you know, I don't know what's going on, but this is really disrespectful to have us sit here when I have an 11 o'clock appointment. And, you know, she was very gracious. She said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. You know, we won't be too much longer. So eventually 11 o'clock became 11:30 and 11:30 became a quarter to 12. And by this time I was agitated and I couldn't wait to get in to talk to the doctor and express my disapproval. So now the key of this is all during this time with the problem that my mind created about being disrespectful and my body responding to that, I was creating a separation between myself, the reception person, and soon to be doctor, and the whole general situation. So I was experiencing this preference that I had, which was that I should be seen at 11 o'clock, not now. So right around the quarter to 12, the receptionist came and got me and I went in. They took the temperature on the head and all of that. And then she asked me to just sit in this particular chair that I was in. And then the doctor comes in and I'm ready. And he goes, oh, Mr. Bachman, I am so sorry. I had an emergency this morning. I couldn't put it off. I had to take care of it immediately. And so we're all backed up. So now I go from this to this, where I'm appreciating what happened to this guy. And now I'm feeling connected to the whole situation and, of course, badly about the way I had handled it originally. So I went from hell to heaven, right? I went from separation to a connection. And it's really interesting that the different experiences from separation and the experience of being connected, of connection. So this isn't just philosophy. This happens in our everyday life. So emptiness, which is what the Heart Sutra is about, is not knowing. It's about being open to life that is free of preferences, ideas, expectations. And it's when we don't know that we experience everything as one, this one body that I mentioned. Now, in our practice, the method that we use to realize and express this oneness is Zazen. Now, the next part of it is Maha Prajna. And Prajna is the functioning of the one body. It's the wisdom that comes out of the experience of emptiness. And Prajna is seeing everything unfiltered just as it is, empty of ideas, empty of the stories that our mind creates. So, and we always, you know, I refer to it, and it's referred to in Zen as just this. Nothing added, just this. This moment right now. And in a sense, or not in a sense, but basically it's bearing witness. We have no preferences, nothing to add on. We are just present to this moment. And Prajna is seeing things as they are before we attach a meaning. So, you know, the rain falls on a tin roof. And before we make a haiku about it, it is just this. The rain falls on the tin roof. But before we create a haiku of this beautiful image, now already I'm adding a whole bunch of stuff onto it. Before that happens, it's just this. And then right outside the door, there is someone listening to the sound of the rain on the tin roof. But just this. No stories, just listening, just being present. And then at the same time, there is someone else drinking a cup of tea. But there is just this, just drinking. No story, just. So it's what is before we attach a story to it. It's just the sound of the rain on the roof. That's it. And when we're in that place of just simply bearing witness, that just this place, that is the experience of being at one. There's no language, no thoughts, nothing to separate us from the drops on the tin roof. So prajna is the oneness of life, which is just expressing itself in a myriad of ways. And wisdom is living and acting as one with all that is. And again, we all have experiences of just this. We all have experiences in our lives where we totally are present to something without thinking about it, without making up a story, without thinking that we are, wow, look at how into this we are, how at one we are. All of that is not there, right? It's just drinking a cup of tea. It's just painting a wall. It's just digging the garden before any stories, about any reflections, or any distance that's created by I am digging. So the next part is the paramita part. Now, there are a myriad of translations about what paramita is. But for this talk, paramita, the most common way of hearing it is that it's going over to the other shore, that there's this practice and we eventually go over to the other shore. And for this talk, paramita means at the other shore, which is another translation. So instead of thinking going from the state of delusion to the state of enlightenment, what it means is that we are already there. Right here, right now, is the other shore. There's nothing to go to. There is no over there. And this experience, this is enlightenment. Everything is enlightenment. And how could there be another shore? So there's no future. There's no past. It's all now. There's nowhere to go and there's nowhere to get to. So we don't practice, and I've mentioned this before, we don't practice to get enlightenment. We don't practice to realize something. Instead, practice is a method used to reveal what is already us, to reveal our inherent enlightenment. So a little story. This is from the Surangama Sutra. And it illustrates this point of everything being now. Enlightenment is not something we seek after. We are already enlightened. So once upon a time, there was a prince who, upon waking up, would look at himself in the mirror and exclaim, "Ah, how beautiful." He was very handsome, and he loved himself very much. But one day he woke up, he picked up the mirror the wrong way. And because the back of the mirror was not polished, he could not see his face in it, and he panicked. "My head is gone. My head is gone. It's missing. It's missing." And he went completely berserk, running into the streets, yelling in this manner. He searched everywhere to find his missing head. Eventually, some friends saw him and grabbed him, saying, "You have your head. Why are you running around like this?" "No, no, my head is gone," the prince insisted. They took him back to the palace, but were unable to calm him down. They did not have straitjackets in those days, so they tied him to a pillar. He screamed so loudly that they had to gag him. So here he was, bound and gagged, struggling to break loose so he could continue searching for his missing head. Finally, he got tired. I mean, after all, you could only struggle for so long. And when he had calmed down somewhat, one of his friends smacked him in the face, and the prince shouted, "My head! It's there after all!" For a few days, he was beside himself with joy, telling everyone that he had found his head. His head was there. How wonderful! But when all his friends just look at him in disbelief, he finally stopped being so exuberant about having found his head. It had always been there. So this is a little story about enlightenment, about finding our head, which has always been there. So everything exists in this moment. Our true nature, that we are in life, are one, exists right here and now. We are one with a fall leaf dropping to the ground without a sound, with the warmth of the sun on a chilly day, with the young child who has cancer asleep in his mother's arms, with the mechanic changing oil in a rusty old car, at one with everything in life that manifests itself. It's always been right here in this present moment. I know this is difficult, because we have created a world that we see differently. But if you continue to sit, you will realize the truth of these words, that everything is here right now, including our own enlightenment, our own realization of our true nature. So the next time you look at yourself in the mirror, you may want to take up this story. So we have Maha Prajna Paramita, heart, is the next word. And the essence or the heart of this sutra is, again, not knowing, which makes it possible for life to manifest itself. As soon as we know something, life is confined to what we know. It's put in a box, into a kennel. So we're no longer free to experience it as it is, where everyone and everything and anything is constantly appearing in accordance with changes in time and circumstances. So it's the difference between being put in a prison that we create for ourselves by knowing, by being attached to knowing. If we let go of what we know and we enter into not knowing, we free ourselves. We're wide open. So when our perspective is not knowing, the universe is dynamic, alive, and constantly co-arising. And if we are attached to knowing, this endless manifestation of things, one after another, can't be experienced. So we have Prajna Paramita Heart Sutra. And so sutra, this is interesting. I came across this. It was an interesting way of looking at sutra. In the definitions that I gave you, scriptures are writings that contain the teachings of Buddha. But we can go beyond that, that they're the teachings of Buddha. And so a sutra can also mean a joining or a sewing of two things together as one. And this is like the word suture in English. And it can also mean a warp, which are the threads of a weaving or an interweaving of all things. So the sutras are metaphorically the strings or the threads that run through everything that allow all motion, all forms to function interconnectedly. Now, I always, thinking about this, there's something about the Heart Sutra that if I could, if I was allowed to, I would consider naming it the Open Heart Sutra. And because if we experience the essence of what I've been talking about, the essence of the Heart Sutra, I think it naturally happens that our hearts open when we become connected, when we become intimate, which we have not been before, when we have that experience of our true nature, of the oneness of things. I think it's heart opening. And on a human level, I think it totally changes our relationships with each other. So I'm going to write the International Buddhist Association and see if I can encourage them to change the title to Open Heart Sutra. Now, I don't see one smile out there, so I am kidding. Okay, so for practice circle, this is what I'd like to do. Now, I know that, like I was explaining in my story about the doctor, each one of us, probably on a daily basis, experiences the separation that we create for ourselves. And also, the experience of the connectedness that we have. And it may be both. You may experience the disconnection and then, like I did, wind up realizing the connection of things that I had lost. So in the practice circle, I'd like to encourage you to present, you know, offer a circumstance that you had experienced where either you found yourself lost in separation or you found yourself in one with everything, or like I said, both of them. And again, I'll mention this again later, but the practice will be that when each one of us is expressing these experiences, that the others of us are bearing witness, which is sitting in the presence of that person, not knowing, waiting to find out. So thanks for listening.